Fronts is the latest book written by Ursula Krippa and Stephen Mueller, which uncovers a growing geography of codependence between the global security complex and the urban morphologies of the developing world, which it increasingly incriminates. They spent years of research tracking simulated urban replicas, their architectural and urban typologies for urban warfare training, and the informal environments that they duplicate. Today, my guests are Ursula Krippa and Stephen Mueller. Welcome to State of the Arts.
Thank you so much.
You guys are just naturally curious and very smart people, but what got you interested in these simulated environments in particular?
So I think it's always been a part of our practice to sort of seek out the environments that are overlooked or under-considered in the rest of urban design thinking and maybe architectural design thinking. So even in our earliest days when we were just graduating graduate school together, we were looking at environments in Albania, for instance, where Ursula is from, which were being transformed really radically by a mayor who was looking at the country as being in this situation where they needed to transform in a positive way, but they didn't really have the resources to do it. And so there's this famous project of this citywide painting agenda where he and a troop of artists painted all of the former communist apartment blocks in these brilliant, bright murals and really affected a great deal of change and attracted investment. And so we've always sort of been drawn to these types of environments. I think the particular turn towards informal environments started, we had the opportunity to be on a fellowship in Rome as part of the Rome Prize in Architecture from the American Academy. And there we were looking at the Roma community. Some might call them the gypsies, the Rome and the Sinti populations, who were being sort of pushed out of the city center into these consolidated kind of municipally controlled camps and were not allowed to sort of seek out their own shelters and livelihoods in the informal settlements that they had been living in and developing over the last several decades. A number of them were Italian citizens at this point. So that was probably the first time we sort of positioned ourselves in a location where we were engaged with an informal community and really watching like political activists, artists, and other advocates sort of work with a community in order to improve living conditions, get them voting rights and things like this, in addition to all of the urban infrastructural needs that they had.
I think when we were looking at informality, and it tends to essentially be in marginalized environments, right? Underserved populations, underserved communities, living in poverty. And so increasingly, as we were reading more and understanding more about how these environments happen, then we were realizing that there is a overlap between them and conflict and war. Then as we were zooming out, we were actually realizing that the U.S. military and then the global military-industrial complex are actually essentially targeting informal environments because there is a perception that they're uncontrollable, that there's a perception that, you know, there aren't wide streets or a big infrastructure that allows for tanks and for this kind of controllability. And so as we were realizing, you know, we were reading a lot of Mike Davis, Planet of Slums, and a lot of UN High Commissioner for Refugees studies, then we were realizing that they are essentially really controlled by war. And as you know, the U.S. has been in war for two decades now, and you don't see war in Paris or in London. You always see it in informal environments because life happens that is self-settled, that is not necessarily to codes that allow for that kind of surveillance from above. And so then we were saying, as we were scraping government databases and congressional hearings and all this data in order to actually understand how urban warfare was enacted, then we realized that so much of it is in training, right? Months and months of training in built environments that sometimes very faithfully replicate the theater of war.
Did you all by chance get to go out to the replica that's out here that Fort Bliss has?
Yeah, they actually have several. So the book actually focuses on one particular type of replica, which is the gold standard, we call it. It's called a Combined Arms Collective Training Facility, or a CACTF. The CACTF at Fort Bliss is one of the sites that we got to visit. It's also called Zambrania Training Village. A lot of these sites have names that are coded in a way to make them sound like they're in the countries that the military is training to intervene within. Yeah, and so we visited that site. I guess our first experience in this region, actually, and part of the reason that we moved to El Paso, we visited a site in Playas, New Mexico, which is actually a former copper mining town, like an actual town that's now been converted for the purposes of warfare training through a number of different trading hands, from Department of Homeland Security to now New Mexico Tech.
That makes sense.
They're testing explosives and weapons there. Yeah.
And so just to see all of these environments, well, most of them that meet the standard anyway, like the strategy is to build just enough of the physical environment that would signal the reality of a city without actually having to build an entire city, right? So it's kind of like an excerpt of a city, and they collect all the different, we call them typologies in architecture, like all of the different building types that are common throughout cities. And what we're realizing in these environments is the types of buildings and the types of infrastructure that they end up building are partially what you'd expect in kind of a global city, right? There's an embassy, there's a church, there's a bank, there's an office building, there's a lot of residences and things like that. But what really caught our attention was increasingly there are these typologies that are more associated with the developing world and informal environments. And so as a military training site, you sort of elevate your status up the ranks if you're able to include an environment like a shanty town or a refugee camp. Several of them have mosques because of our involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan and now North Africa. So they were these types of simulations that really caught our attention and really became a kind of focus for the book.
Were you finding that there was, so there's what it's based on, but then there's like the idea of what a replica is. And after a while, do they just kind of start to look and feel the same, or maybe treat these areas as the quote unquote bad, but I mean, they're designing them, right? I mean, these are replicas.
Right, right. Yeah, I think after visiting, well, we visited Playas twice and Fort Bliss, they do feel the same. And I think it's also, it has something to do with the materiality and essentially being able to save resources and to kind of recycle them. And so when we were visiting Playas a few years ago now, it was right before the U.S. military was going into North Africa. And so they were changing the writing on the wall. They were like updating the layout of the Playas town to become more like a North African village. And so there's like an internet cafe and there's a bakery. And so in a way, because, you know, they try to stay as faithful as possible. They talk to us about even hinges on the windows and the way the shutters are screwed or not has something to do with the reality in the ground. But then because they have to continue to recycle these and because the military is constantly going into different regions, sometimes it's just like a fresh coat of paint or some other signage in another language. And so they kind of start blurring, you know, the idea of like the simulacra is just, it's like a collection of what we think a foreign nation might look like. It's a strange kind of fakeness, you know?
Yeah, because it makes me think life-size Lego blocks that you can kind of move around to repurpose, you know, and okay, you're in North Africa now, you're in Iraq now. But are they being built by architects like you, or who's designing these communities?
So architects are sometimes consulted. A lot of the villages and the training environments are built either by sort of forces on base that are part of sort of the military construction endeavors. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers actually has a set of standards and helps generate the kind of designs and the contracts. So one of the things that we were noticing is as we were going to each individual environment, there's kind of an attitude in a lot of these environments that like, oh, this one is the state of the art. This is the one that has pyrotechnics and, you know, simulated smells and other ones don't and things like that. Because the military, as we know, is sort of, it's organized on a series of bases, and bases are kind of worlds unto themselves, and you sort of see what you have at hand, right? And so even the military kind of experts that deal with these environments didn't necessarily have a broad overview of the extent of how many of these environments there are throughout the nation and how common a lot of these techniques and typologies that we're talking about are. And then so what we were able to do, we actually uncovered close to 500 of these sites in and around the U.S. And just for comparison's sake, I would think in the popular press, there's a handful in California and a few in Louisiana and elsewhere, but maybe a dozen or maybe two dozen, if we're being generous, that are consistently reported on in the press. But like I said, we were able to uncover 500. And what's really interesting is, as we found like the name of the site where, okay, you know, this fort or this installation actually has one of these villages, we were able to sort of scan the aerial photography just from Google Earth and whatnot. And we were able to recognize the kind of signature stamp of, you know, these buildings in a particular kind of landscape that signals this is one of these environments. And as we zoom in to each building, you can actually identify each building because they're so consistent. There's a particular footprint that is the bank everywhere. It's the bank in California, it's the bank in Alaska, it's the bank. And so these buildings just kind of get copy-pasted over these several hundred sites throughout the U.S. and then bases abroad. And so we're also noticing that these kind of cities, you know, these fake cities, have their own patterns of urbanization, really. They start to grow and assemble themselves a lot like actual cities,
right,
where they just sort of opportunistically, you know, start aggregating more and more of this type or that type of development in order to meet training needs in the same way that like a real city would just grow a neighborhood or a commercial district or things like that. So,
but there's a funny hierarchy with the buildings. The typologies, as Stephen mentioned, like the embassy or the mosque, they're built. But then there are the sort of like the filler buildings that are completely nondescript. They're always shipping containers that have been plastered on with like a fake pattern of CMU, of cinder block. And they're always this kind of funny brown. Those are the copy paste that we always see, that they're like only the skin or the makeup changes. And they're, you know, they're just like the filler like buildings that might exist in a secondary street or something like that.
There's two goals for this kind of, I guess you could call it an architecture, right? One is to kind of provide the feeling of being in a dense city, right? And so they place these buildings in a way that can give you the impression of density, the impression that you can't just, you know, roll a tank in from any angle, or that you're covered if you're in a certain position. So that's sort of human, right? There's a kind of like theatricality that's trying to trick the trainees into thinking that they are in an actual environment. And a lot of trainees actually come back with stories after a training simulation, which includes real explosions, fake explosions, mock executions, like all sorts of things that they would expect to find in theater. They come back with stories of post-traumatic stress disorder because of the reality of this kind of feeling of being in this environment. And then the other thing is to kind of build the architecture in a way that also tricks the ammunition or the sensing devices that the military uses. So there's, you know, as they're building these buildings, decades ago, they would just build a kind of empty shell, right? Maybe not put windows in it, maybe not insulate it and things like this, or just build an entire city out of shipping containers, for instance. But they were realizing, because these environments, that they aren't just kind of the shoot houses that the infantry would train in order to clear rooms. They're designed for multiple forces to collaborate on like a collaborative action. So like air support, ground support, armored vehicles, infantry, all of those would be at play. And so they're noticing, if you don't build the city like we actually build a city, then aerial targeting mechanisms won't actually see the buildings the way that the pilots would expect to see buildings, with a certain heat signature and with all of these things that they would see with their imaging equipment. And so there's, like, just as these cities, we're saying that they're urbanizing, they're becoming like cities in their own right with dozens and dozens, hundreds and hundreds of buildings in some cases. They're also becoming like more and more like real city. Like, it's no longer a simulation. Like, you know, there's this famous kind of summary of the Borges story, right? That like the map has become the territory. Like, it's a one-to-one scale replica of exactly what you would find, down to the plumbing, the insulation, the sewer system, the subway, everything you would expect to find somewhere else. It's being built one-to-one.
It's so mind-blowing. I mean, you guys wrapped it up. You have a book, but it doesn't stop. So are you still kind of, what's going on over there? Or, you know, because I imagine once you've gotten in this rabbit hole, like, how do you get out of it? Or do you get out of it?
Right. Well, so our book was supposed to be twice the size that it is now in the number of pages. And so we had to really, really cut it down. And so we've realized that there are entire chapters that didn't make it that will become books. And so I think in our minds, we're on book like 4 or 5.
Yeah, I can't imagine that you're done. I look forward to learning more about it. I can't thank you guys enough. And thank you for continuing to be so curious and to really dig in there for us, because I don't have the time to do that. But it's so cool that you guys did. Today, my guests have been Ursula Krippa and Stephen Mueller, and we've been talking about their book called Fronts. Thank you so much for coming to State of the Arts.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.